In these podcasts, I'm going to try and introduce people that I've met and respect. People that are more expert than me and that can bring something to your table as well as my own. They're going to scratch my itch and in the process hopefully add to the techniques and tips that I'm going to share with you from my own journey. For now, we're going to start with something about acoustics, the wonderful world of sound, and hopefully there's something in this that you can benefit from a lot. For now though, here we go with Acoustics 101. When I started doing these podcasts, I, like most things, was very excited and thought I'll churn out one at least a fortnight and didn't. So I just looked the other day and noticed, and thank you, that some of the podcasts that we've previously recorded have got downloads in the thousands. I was shocked and really appreciative. So it has inspired me to get going again, and I'm going to tackle a really hard one, which is possibly the reason that I've taken this long to get round to it, which is relating to making your performance environment a place that's easy to work in, easy to teach in, something that doesn't interfere with your neighbours, and is essentially a much more pleasant place to be. So this is commonly called soundproofing, wrongly. I like the expression acoustic enhancement to cover this range of topics, because it's not just about music. It's not just about voice. It's about a whole range of things, which include a general discussion about what is sound. Now, this is going to go for a while, this podcast, so I'll probably end up breaking it up into parts, but I'm just going to launch in and see where it takes me and possibly edit all this bit out later. So a really interesting and delightfully in-depth but accessible discussion of sound is by the wonderful Tim Urban. I originally found Tim Urban on a TED Talk, and later I think he was interviewed by Tim Ferriss, whom I'm a fan of as well, as you know. And he sort of gets under the skin of things and has done a great one in his ongoing blog, Wait But Why. And like everything in this, there's going to be notes in the podcast, so you don't have to scribble it all down. And if you're driving, don't worry, it's all going to be there in the show notes that will be attached to this. But he does do some interesting comments about what sound is. Now, obviously, sound is something that we hear or something that makes a noise. But in physics, it's a little different. And it's actually a vibration that's going through matter. So in other words, sound can pass through things and we have to sometimes prevent that. And it does this, you know, a wave. And I think you've probably heard the term sound wave. So Tim uses the wonderful metaphor of it being like an earthworm or a sort of snake or a slinky. So these things sort of ripple as they move. So your vocal cords or a guitar string or even a waterfall moves through the air and through any matter for that matter. And how we normally experience it is through these wonderful things called ears, which are extraordinary. I mean, your ears with a little vibrating bone communicates extraordinary subtleties of music, of voice, so that an intonation can change a meaning, that a subtlety of playing can, of the same music, be extraordinary from one musician and very plain from another. Anyway, so sound travels pretty quickly, 768 miles per hour or 1,234 kilometres, and slows down and extraordinary when it's in water. Now, when you do exceed those speeds with an object or a missile or famously a plane, you get a sonic boom, so-called breaking the sound barrier. And that's a pretty loud noise if you've ever heard one. So sound then is so essential to communication that we have to model our environments to maximise that. Now, the ear can understand as lots of qualities of sound, but the two most fundamental of these is pitch, which is about how far apart these
ripples or wavelengths are. So the shorter the wavelength, the higher the pitch. Humans can hear frequencies as low as 20 hertz and as high as 20,000 hertz. So when you see hertz measurements, understand that the low end or the low numbers, the bases, and that the high numbers or high frequencies are those high pitch noises. So within that understanding, you can literally, you know, if you're in the car and you've got a really good sound system, you can feel the bass notes. And similarly, you can feel that at a good sound system at a concert or a venue. So those things are about the pitch of sound. And then we get loudness. Now, loudness is pretty obvious, but it's what it's actually done is it's determined by the amplitude of the pressure waves. In other words, the speed at which they're hitting it. So the louder sounds have a larger movement between the high and low pressure sections of it. And we measure loudness by a unit named after Alexander Graham Bell, which I'm sure you've heard of, called a decibel. Now, this is a pretty useful thing because it gives us the opportunity to say, okay, well, where do things sit in within decibels? Well, if we start at zero, that's what this is using the human ear, then that's where it begins. So, and then at about 10 decibels, we start to hear things. At 30, it's like someone whispering fairly close. And 60 is a normal conversation. So you can imagine that now I'm talking at about 60 decibels. At 75 decibels, it's someone shouting at you. At 90 is a lawnmower. 100, motorcycle or the like. And when you get up to about 120, you're at a rock concert or equivalent. And you're starting to feel pain, which you're definitely feeling at about 140 or 150, which is like a gunshot or a jet engine near you. And by that point, you're hurting your ears. Unbelievably or believably, at 180 decibels, the sound can actually kill you. And 194 is the limit to what we measure sound. Now, famously, I mean, the no one that survived Hiroshima or Nagasaki can tell you, and they were killed otherwise, but those sort of explosions are what measure around 194. And the most famous of them was the exploding of Krakatoa, a sound that was heard all around the world in different ways. So that's an idea about decibels, and you know, you got to sort of think, well, how does that affect me? Well, there are now numerous studies which indicate how important to stress levels, to tiredness, to a whole range of things relevant to a learning environment that are affected by sound. With current architecture going away from heavy drapes and sort of heavy furnishings, I think we've all been to a restaurant or a bar particularly, where you can't hear the person you're with. And this is largely because all the surfaces in those contemporary architectures are what they call reflective of sound. So you get the sounds bouncing off everything in the room and becoming a bit of a jumble. So that's literally called reflection. And it occurs when it's your originated sound strikes a surface or several surfaces before you get to hear it. So things like corners or peak ceilings, they all create a kind of megaphone effect. And loud spaces, in some spaces, they can have disastrous consequences, say in a studio, a dance studio. The best description I've heard to describe the way sound works is to compare it to water. So, for example, if you take a pool and you flip a stone into it, you get these ripples that come out. And those ripples hit the side of the pool and then they start coming back in again, or the pond, and they start coming back in again. Then if you flip another stone, then you've got another set of ripples and another set of ripples. And these ripples are all going out to the sides and they're hitting each other and they're conflicting. And those are some of the things that create issues in a room. So reflection obviously, is what that's about. You also get this idea of a thing called reverberation. Now, if you go into a room and you clap loudly, then you can very quickly tell what the acoustic nature of that room is. This is a really simple test that you should do, because it's about that echoing, if you like, of the sound that can create the problems. So this is generally called reverberation. It's essentially a collection of reflected waves, and technically it's the time taken for the reflected sound to die down by 60 decibels from where it starts to where it finishes. So in an enclosed space, it takes some time for that sound to become inaudible. And this persistence of sound in the room and the multiple, that pebble analogy, is called reverberation. And it plays a crucial role in the quality of the integral elements of your room, your music, and the ability to understand voices whilst that music's playing. So the effect of this condition in a live space, such as a studio, with a long reverberation time, will cause a build-up of noise in it and make it much, much harder for things to be communicated easily and freely. So we probably want to do something about that if we've got that sustained reverb. So we're going to introduce things with a noise reduction coefficient, which is called an NRC. Now, an NRC is the rating of the effectiveness of a material to absorb the sound. So coming back to that water idea, you've got two things happening. You can contain the sound, in other words, as you would in a bowl of water, which is whereby you insulate your walls or whatever so the sound can't escape, and we'll revisit that in a moment. Or you have the ability to absorb it like a sponge. And this is where the noise reduction coefficient of different things come into play. And I'm going to address different ways that we do that shortly. So referring to the containment of it, then we have the sound transmission class, or the STC. And this describes the ability of different materials to prevent sound passing through them. So, for example, loud speech, well, you know, it's 70-ish decibels, can be understood fairly well through an STC wall, but would not be audible through an STC 30 wall, but would not be audible through an STC 60 wall. The rating then, assessing the airborne sound transmission performance at a range of frequencies from 125 hertz to around 4,000 hertz. And this range is consistent with the frequency of speech. Now, obviously, special consideration must be given to spaces where the noise transfer concern is other than speech, such as music. And that's where we get into that general expression of soundproofing. So acoustic treatment and soundproofing are terms that have quite different meanings, but are sharing the same physics that we've sort of referred to a little bit earlier. Reflection and reverberation are more about that internal sound, and the sound transmission is more about how it gets into the next room. So what do we do about this? By nature, like the restaurants we described earlier, dance studios and many performance spaces, including halls, are just a bunch of hard surfaces. A floor, mirrors maybe, a stage that hasn't been correctly attuned. And often as not, particularly say in halls, stack of chairs or plain chairs that have got no absorption to them. So, in other words, they lend themselves to a high degree of reverberation, and bad acoustics can make the difference, as we know, between a good experience and a bad experience. Now, for any real result with containing or controlling this, you need to affect between 30 and 60% of the wall and ceiling area. Now, there's a number of different ways that this can be achieved. And what I always recommend to people is that you do the big, hard, or the big easy brush strokes first, so that it may be that you, and this is an extremely good example, is that you put heavy drapes in. These work really well, obviously, and are normal on a performance stage. They're there for other reasons, but by using a 500 or greater GSM wool, then you get a deadening of sound from source, so that when it's projected or controlled through microphones, it's a cleaner and better sound than that that's bouncing around in there. So what you have with your heavy drapes on a stage is a useful acoustic advantage as well. Similarly, in a performance hall, the seating itself can become a substantial advantage, to the point that some venues will have a hard side and a soft side, in other words, an upholstered side to the seating and an unupholstered side to the seating, so that they can tune the room a little bit just with the seats. To note, of course, is that human bodies in there are going to change the acoustics of that room enormously when people sit in it, so that when you're rehearsing and doing your sound checks, then it's possible that you're getting a completely different reading than you will on the day. So you need an experienced person or someone that's, you know, given this some thought to set the sound levels to suit a performance, considering that it's going to be a different room when everybody's in there. So the cheapest and biggest and best bang for your buck then is these heavy drapes. And if you go into your local cinema, you'll find that almost every time the walls have been draped with heavy cloths, heavy black cloths, and usually wool in the same range that I just told you. One of the advantages of wool is it's naturally fire retarded, although typically in commercial spaces, then it's treated as well. So if you look behind that, there's a rough old wall typically, so that they've had the advantage of using the drapes for their acoustic value and also just to conceal stuff that isn't that pretty. So you may decide, okay, well, look, I've got mirrors. I need to block those out for exams. I might put my drapes in front of, I'll get some drapes, I'll put them in front of the mirrors and know that even when they're not necessarily closed, in other words, they're drawn, they still act as a big sponge. In the corners of the room, they're still working just fine. They're still doing a whole bunch of absorption, which is what you want to do to get rid of that reverb. Interestingly, how your speakers are placed and where your speakers are placed is something to consider as well. To get the most value from their projection of sound is to put something absorbent at the point of first reflection. So an easy way to do this is to get a laser point or even just do it by eye. See where those speakers are directed to and put something absorbent there. And these can be a number of panels that we'll talk about in a minute. It may be that they're pointing at some curtains. If you've got windows, well, obviously we all like the natural light, but in a studio situation, a dance studio situation at least, these have got two negatives, and one of them is the UV affecting your tarkett or your marley or your vinyl, which is a negative. And secondly, is the fact that they're very, very reflective things. So putting curtains over your windows is another double bang for your buck. You get the acoustic advantage and you get the advantage of the UV component of that sun not hurting your dance floor. Sadly, it affects your view and is meaning you're normally using lights rather than natural sunlight. You can get in the habit, though, of just opening those drapes when you've got a class and keeping them shut when you're not there. Importantly, though, if you're using heavy wool, you should use a solar backing behind, because those same nasty UV rays will affect your curtains over time and they will become faded in quite a definite manner where the light's striking them, just as your floor would. The efficiency of your curtains will be a direct proportion to how much fabric they have in. So you'll get the expression fullness when referring to curtains. That's 50%, for example, or 100% or greater. So basically what that's saying is the amount of folds that you've got in the curtain. So the most common one, apart from obviously a flat curtain, is 50%. So most of your backstage curtains will be that, and generally I would recommend that for being in front of mirrors and the like. So 50% fullness will mean that it's 1.5 times the fabric, and 100% fullness will mean it's all of it. Look, it's a temptation often to use drapes because of their cost effectiveness to divide rooms up. Generally, you're not going to get a great result with that. Two layers of 100% fullness will give you a 15 decibel advantage. not really enough to limit music. It's really kind of the difference between a voice like this and a shout like that. So it's not going to control music. It can be improved by having a absorbent layer in between. But generally, if you want to isolate two rooms, but still have the opportunity to open them up into a larger room, then you'd probably need to use an operable wall. And these are the walls that concertina back to either one or both sides of the room and can be dragged out into the room. Now, they're not cheap, and they do work. They have different STC values, in other words, that transmission class. So you have to be aware of what that is. Now, what we've discovered is probably the best weighting for a dance studio or a music control would be da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I'll come back to that. So you make sure you select a wall that will properly match the acoustics of your room. And in essence, it has to be, the way it works is moving interlocking panels suspended from an overhead track system. Sound-rated panels for the noise control, and probably a colour scheme that works with your room's aesthetics, similar to any permanent wall, really. And you can get different finishes from timber through vinyl through fabric through some of the polyester-based absorbent materials that we're speaking about independently. So this sort of naturally leads us into separating rooms. Now, acoustic walls can be installed ideally at the beginning, but can be a retrofit. If a wall's not performing adequately, typically you might want to add another layer, or two layers actually, of gyprock. And between those layers of gyprock have a decoupling layer. The one that I mostly recommend is a product by Acoustica called QuietWave. And this is a really thin fabric designed to go through between two layers of plasterboard. What you're doing with this system is you're converting a sound wave into a heat form. Is that how it dissipates?
Yeah, basically it's a transformation of energy, of vibration, because the noise wave makes the first layer of plasterboard vibrate, and then you got a little delay before it goes into the membrane, which is the quiet wave, and again a bit of delay before it's transmitted again to the second layer of plasterboard. And because you got those delays, the plasterboard move into sideways, and the membrane, which is in between, acts like a brake. And braking, vibration, you create energy in the thermal energy, and so you got a change of energy there from vibration to thermal, if you like.
So what happens with this instance, you would put a normal furring channel, which is the lightweight timber, lightweight metal, or if you want timber, to separate this wall from the existing wall that's not performing properly. So then you've got to address what else is between the two rooms. And the doors are significant in this regard, and they should be treated to be acoustically sound as well. Now, acoustic doors, formerly rated acoustic doors, are insanely expensive. But you can very simply take a solid core door, that's one that's solid wood, and put that same quiet wave fabric on either side, just glue it on, and then skin that again with we'd use 9mm MDF, which gives you a paintable surface, and you can then turn relatively cheaply your doorway into an acoustic door. So then, as you always need to do, you need to seal around the door and use this one we normally recommend as a product made by a company called Raven. So Raven seals around that door, so it's pulling back into what's like a little spongy rubber. And then at the bottom has another seal that can move a little bit within the door to seal it from sneaking out underneath. So like water, the sound's going to try and sneak through any holes. Similarly, it's going to try and sneak over your wall and into the next room. In this instance, we recommend a product by a company called Pyrotech, which is a product called Wave Bar, usually in about 4 or 8 kilos. And this stops that sound getting over and between the ceiling and the roof. And this is a horrible job because you've got to crawl up in that roof space and stick it in between. You don't have to be too perfect about it, but the more holes you are, that watery sound will sneak into the next room. So it's quite common to have a really nice acoustic wall and it's not working. And it's, oh, whoops, we haven't done the ceiling. This is also the case, for example, through your floor. We like to use Wave Bar under a floor if we think there's going to be transmission issues down below. But it can sneak out the sides and go down the walls. So that has to be addressed as well by being sealed or some absorbent material being placed under the floor around the perimeter where it can sneak out and get into the walls. I know it sounds a bit complex, but it's not as bad as it sounds. And there's various pictures and drawings in the show notes that are going to be attached that'll explain this possibly a bit better. If you're building a wall from the ground up, you've got the opportunity to also put in acoustic absorbent bats or similar material, sound sorber materials. And a little trick here is that you, and again, care of Acoustica, is to what they call offset your furring. So you might, with these steel bits that go up the wall, that they'll transmit sound through themselves quite happily. So what you try and do is have a offset so that one's against the opposing wall and one's against your wall. So they're staggered, in other words. And you can do this by using a 64mm stud and a 92mm track, if that makes sense to your builder. A second approach then is to put absorbent materials into the room. Now, one of the easiest ones to affect is your roof. And this allows you to use materials that would otherwise be subject to picky fingers, such as a melamine expanded foam. And these can be stuck straight on because, and we recommend these be above reach, above the picture line. And it's a relatively, and none of it's cheap, but it's a relatively cost-effective way of affecting a room. Similarly, up in the ceiling, you can do variants on what we call clouds. And this is where you hang panels, acoustic panels, such as some of the Ortex range, which I'm going to talk about shortly, where you hang acoustic panels through the ceiling so that they can absorb that sound that's otherwise going to be bouncing off the roof. And trust me, it does. You'll also see, and a little more expensively, where people have put slotted or perforated wooden panels on the walls. These work in two ways, actually. They work in that same way as pebbles do in a stream, getting back to that water analogy, where they sort of break the sound up. So by those little perforations mean that the sound goes in and gets shredded, if you like, macerated by the fact that it has to penetrate. These can be made even more effective by adding some sound absorbing material behind. I always and repeat that you should do your sound enhancements, your acoustic enhancements by stages, because you'll always get to a point where it's good enough. So if you do a bit by bit, then you're going to get the best return on your investment. So imagine the big curtains cost you $10 and then the panels on the wall, and they gave you a 10 out of 10 advantage. But then, and then the panels on the wall that you've added, you know, give you a 7 out of 10 for the same $10. And then the next thing gives you a 5 out of 10 for the next expenditure. So you get a diminishing return on the money you're spending as you go on. So just, it's worth giving it some thought as to what you want to achieve, how much you want to achieve, and as I said, do it by stages. You can always add without the cost of taking away. One of the other really nice and probably one of my favourite approaches to affecting the absorption characteristics of the room is to use what are often recycled PET bottles, and this is particularly the products made by Ortex, which have got a wonderful 5-star green rating, as actually does the expanded melamine, as in the plano that we mentioned putting on the roof earlier. These can come in lots of different ways, and there's now a few companies doing it. Ortex had it to themselves, but now there's a few doing it. These can be covered in a fabric and often come with a nice range of fabrics in two finishes, one loop pile and another being a more sheer fabric. Or they can be have an acoustically rated fabric stretched over them. And the way you know a fabric has the ability to be acoustically transmitting, which you want it to be in the stage because you want the sound to get through to the absorbent material behind, it's just by blowing through it. So if you can blow through it, you know that the sound will pass through it relatively easily and will then accumulate in the absorbent material behind. So this allows you to get a decorative print of some kind, and we're going to refer to some great resources for that in the show notes. Some of the absorbent materials you can print straight onto, so you can have a photo of your choice, including your students, yourself, whatever, something, just a nice image. And that means that you've got a combination then of a beautiful picture on the wall that also works as a sound absorbent. So that's another opportunity. Similarly, some of the products that I mentioned earlier, which can be as thin as 10 mil, double as pin boards. So we'll often put these, for example, behind a roll-away mirror. So you've got an acoustic advantage and you've got a notice board.
Okay, so it's outro time. Thank you very much for spending this much time with me. I appreciate it. Time's a precious commodity, and hey, thank you again. If you found value in this, please take a moment and review on Apple or equivalents, and also hit the subscribe button. Reviews are great. They help us with Apple. They help us get this word out there, and we really like it. If you want to share us on social, one way to do it is just to take a snapshot of the start of this and spread it on your own network, and we'd like you to do that too. We'd also welcome requests or questions as to any subjects you may wish to have covered. And just to know, pretty much all the products and techniques mentioned here are available through STM Studio Supplies, and we're always there to solve a new problem. And as you know, if we don't know the answer, we're going to source it for you and get back to you. So please feel welcome to email me, martin@monart.com.au, or just phone us on 94173000. We'll also be following up this podcast with some interviews with key suppliers, Acoustica, for example, Ortex, and others. We're planning that these will come with coupon discounts if you wish to buy direct. But until then, check the show notes and feel free to give me a call, or email for that matter. Rock on. Thanks a lot.